Hello, and welcome to Module 2 of Get Over It for Good, Healing the Hidden Wounds of Childhood. This is Dr. Karen Wyatt, hospice physician and author of What Really Matters, 7 Lessons for Living from the Stories of the Dying. I hope you've had a chance to review Module 1 before you started this module, and you've completed your homework like I suggested from that module. If so, let's get started on Module 2, Basic Information, What You Need to Know to Get Over It for Good. Remember, the overall goal of this course is to teach you how your childhood can affect your health and well-being as an adult, and how you can heal it for good. During this course, you are going to learn about adverse childhood experiences, basic child development. I'm going to help you identify significant events from your childhood, recognize how the brain manages negative memories, teach you 3 steps to start the healing process, and dozens of techniques for self-healing as well. There are many benefits you can get from the course, like releasing your energy from the past, getting free from emotional minefields that sabotage you, understanding the origin of your fears, improving your ability to make changes that really last, becoming your true and authentic self, and increasing your energy and joy for living. The objectives of Module 2 are to understand recent research on adverse childhood experiences and their impact on health, to know how to calculate your own ACE score, to summarize basic functioning of the brain and how it manages negative memories, to recognize how negative memories cause you problems, even when they are hidden, and to learn how to use the 3 keys of creative healing to work on your own memories. If you remember from Module 1, I mentioned that there's been recent research done by the Centers for Disease Control looking at the impact of adverse childhood experiences on health and well-being in adulthood. This has been a fascinating study that took many of the researchers by surprise. They actually were not expecting to see the results that they got. But in this study, over 17,000 adults were surveyed for the presence of adverse childhood experiences in childhood. And these were adults who were just everyday average Americans, some with chronic illnesses, some with other health problems and mental health issues, but basically they were all members of the Kaiser Permanente clinics. So the majority of them were employed and had health insurance, meaning that they were actually well-functioning people. And as the result of this study were revealed, it turned out that 2/3 of the people surveyed had experienced some type of trauma during childhood and had experienced at least 1 traumatic event in their childhood. About 1 in 5 of the people surveyed had experienced 4 or more traumatic events during childhood. And in the study, there was a direct correlation with chronic disease in adulthood, as well as mental illness, criminal behavior, and work issues for those people who had experienced a traumatic event during their childhood. Here's a list of some of the health issues that were associated with an adverse childhood experience, according to the study. And it's quite an extensive list. It includes alcoholism, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, depression, fetal death, decreased quality of life, illicit drug use, heart disease, liver disease, smoking, suicide attempts, unintended pregnancies, early smoking, adolescent pregnancy, early sexual activity, sexually transmitted diseases, and risk of domestic violence. That's quite a list. It's rather extensive, and it covers the gamut of chronic medical illnesses that can occur, behavioral illness, and mental health illness. So according to the study, adverse childhood experiences, or ACEs, we'll call them for short, fall into 3 main categories. The first is the category of abuse, and that could be abuse in the form of physical, sexual, or emotional trauma that has taken place. And the second category is neglect, and that could be physical or emotional neglect. The third is family dysfunction. This category includes domestic violence, substance abuse, marital discord, mental illness, and crime, meaning criminal behavior by a member of the household where a child was being raised. But in my thought, there are other traumas that were not included in the study. So they weren't looked at. They weren't in the questions that were asked of people, but other traumas that can occur in childhood can include illness, a death in the family, prolonged separation from a parent. There can be other stressors like being involved in a natural disaster, a fire or a hurricane that caused your family to be displaced for a while and having to live in a shelter. Those are also traumas that can have a significant impact. So not everything was included in the study, but I believe it's important that we take a look at all the possible aspects of adverse experiences in childhood that could be having health consequences in your life. So you can calculate your own ACE score. The ACE score is used to measure the total amount of stress during childhood, and the ACE score tests for the 10 types of adverse childhood experiences that were mentioned in the previous slide, and you can use the actual questionnaire that they used with patients in the study to determine your own ACE score. A score of 1 is significant and associated with health issues, so that means any one type of trauma that happened during your childhood seems to be associated with a higher risk of health issues in adulthood. The higher the score, the greater the risk of health problems. So I've given you a copy of the ACE questionnaire that you can complete for yourself. So you can read the actual questions that the participants in the study answered and determine your own ACE score to see if, according to this study, there are any significant experiences in your life that could be having an impact on your health. As I mentioned before, though, there are some additional categories to look at. So I'll be having you also look at some of those other areas to see if there were other events in your family that may have affected you during your childhood that could be having an impact on your health. So it's really interesting when we start looking at how the brain functions and to study the effect of these adverse childhood experiences on the brain. First of all, trauma of any type causes increased levels of stress hormones in the body, adrenaline and cortisol being two that you've most likely heard of. And here's how this happens. Our brains are wired primarily to help us avoid danger. The primary function of the brain is to protect us. So the primitive brain is constantly on alert, scanning the environment for any threat of potential danger. And the primitive brain actually overreacts to very small things because that's how it can best protect us from something going wrong. When the primitive part of the brain senses that there's danger in the environment, it creates a chain reaction that causes the adrenal glands to secrete adrenaline and cortisol. And these two hormones are responsible for the fight or flight reaction you've probably heard of, which results in the blood pressure going up, heart rate increasing, pupils becoming dilated, and the body is being primed to either run away from danger or to turn and fight the danger. So the body experiences a great deal of stress with the release of these two hormones. This release of hormones causes the brain to continually fire and create heightened senses and awareness of danger and anticipation of danger. When that happens, thinking and learning functions are decreased because the brain is constantly on alert, waiting for danger to happen and being prepared in case it's necessary to run away or stand and fight. So normal growth and development are interfered with, causing a chain reaction throughout life. And when this happens, if you think about it, if you experience one traumatic event, You're not only traumatized in that moment, the brain is causing overproduction of these stress chemicals in the body and shutting down other functions like learning and thinking during that time. So for a period of time after the traumatic event occurs, your body stays in this state of hyper-awareness. But the fact that you have had a traumatic event in the past becomes stored in your brain and makes your brain even more sensitive to other events in the future. And as we continue, we'll see a little bit more about how that happens. So an adverse childhood experience is stored in your brain as a negative memory, and it can be stored either in the conscious part of your brain where you can access it and remember it, or in the subconscious part of the brain. And sometimes memories that were conscious for a while can be shifted into the subconscious and vice versa. But you may not be able to remember an adverse event at all. It's also possible that the event could have happened at a time early enough in life that you no longer have access to memories from that part of your life. These adverse childhood experiences can leave behind residues or traces of old negative memories that can be reactivated out of the blue at any time. This is what happens sometimes when you're least expecting it. So let me give you an example. Say you're walking down the sidewalk on a busy city street and you approach an alleyway, and a vicious dog runs out of the alley suddenly and starts growling and barking at you. You react with a fear response, the fight or flight, and you produce extra adrenaline and cortisol. It causes your heart rate to go up, your hair to stand on end, and you to experience an intense emotion of fear in that moment. But the memory of that event happening, of that dog rushing out at you, becomes stored and also becomes associated with your memory of being in that place at that time. So other circumstances around that place will become tied in with that memory of the dog rushing out at you. If you were to walk down that same sidewalk the next day and the very same dog runs out at you, that memory of fear would grow much, much stronger because it's being reinforced by another occurrence. But the fact is, even if you never see another dog near that alley, your brain will store a memory of that particular place as a potential for danger. That alleyway represents danger for you in some way or another. Even if you're not aware of it, when you walk on the sidewalk and come near that alley again, your heart rate might rise up a little bit. Your brain will be on alert, looking and checking, watching for a dog or any other sign of danger. Now, suppose 2 or 3 months pass by. You've completely forgotten the incident of the dog rushing out at you. You've walked down the same sidewalk every day. Nothing has happened. Everything's fine. The memory is completely gone of that dog. It was such a minor incident at the time. No reason to even remember it. But suppose you're walking down the sidewalk one day and a cat jumps out of the alleyway. A harmless little cat, not dangerous, not vicious in any way, just happens to jump out of the alley in the same area at the same place where the dog had been. Your brain will overreact to that cat and perceive it as another threat, as if it were a vicious dog trying to attack you. At that moment, you may not even understand why you reacted that way. You may have no idea, like, why did I startle so much? Why am I so afraid? It's a simple little cat. It's not threatening to me in any way. It just happened to walk out. And that response will hit you out of the blue. You will not understand why it happened or where it came from, but it's tied to that original experience of the dog nearly attacking you and the fear associated with it. Your brain will hold a trace, a residue of that memory in place, and it will forever be tied to that particular geographical location. And that's what sets you up for that out of the blue, unexpected response. So if you think about this throughout your life, haven't there been times when you've reacted to something someone said or something that happened to you, and your reaction seemed way out of proportion to the event? when you don't even understand it within yourself. Why did you get that angry? Why were you that upset? What the person said was so minor and so small. Well, it's most likely this same phenomenon, that an old residue of a memory from the past is being triggered in you. And that's why your response matches the fear or the anger or the intensity of the emotion you felt in the original situation. And that original response is being triggered in you, even though the current situation doesn't justify such a dramatic response. But the current situation just happens to be similar enough to that residue of memory that's stored in the brain that it triggers it to be released. So that's how you can get tripped up unexpectedly by these hidden wounds and hidden traumas that have occurred in your life. And they don't even have to be severe traumas. That's why I'm using the example of just a vicious dog barking at you and the threat of a possible attack causing this type of chain reaction later on in your life. One of the things we've learned about brain neuroscience is that it takes multiple positive experiences to override one negative experience. That's why your brain hangs on to these negative things for such a long time. It takes a lot of positive experiences to override it. In the case of walking down the street that we have originally described, even though that's why after several weeks of walking down the street and no dog appears, you forget about it. Your brain can override the fact that that experience occurred, but it will retain a trace, a little residue of that memory that will remain there and can be reactivated if, once again, you appear to be in danger when you're in that location. So these adverse events of childhood can only be healed by actively exploring them and connecting them to positive associations. Those residues are going to remain and stay there until we dig them up and we bring positive experiences into association with the memories. Once we connect them with something positive, we can override them and take away the power and the force behind those old residual memories that are waiting there to sabotage us. So it's a fact of brain neuroscience. Your brain has a preference for negative information. That's why this is such a problem. In order to avoid possible dangers, the brain holds on to negative information more tightly. And this makes sense if you think about it, because it's a primitive function of the brain. And in primitive times, the brain wasn't threatened by a positive experience happening. There's no reason for the brain to be worried about it or be on alert for something positive happening. It was negative experiences that could lead to death and threaten survival. So the brain was totally wired for fear and to respond to danger and to situations that posed a threat. And that's still the case with our brains. Our primitive brains are still wired in the same way they were back when we were cavemen. So the brain is more sensitive to negative information. The brain stores negative memories more carefully and more tightly, and those negative memories take higher priority than positive memories. So when storage is getting low in the brain, the positive memories are more likely to get kicked out to make room for negative events to be stored in the brain. The brain also overreacts to negative events. That's why the overreaction when a cat comes out of the alley can occur, because the brain has to react instantaneously at the sight of anything that could represent a potential threat. And even though that cat is not an actual threat, the brain overreacts as if a lion were rushing out and going to eat you, because it has to react instantaneously. And there isn't time to make a decision about how threatening the presence of this animal is. The brain simply reacts and overreacts in order to give you maximum protection. The brain also constantly watches out for negative situations. So a portion of the brain is kind of on alert all the time, like on patrol, watching out, scanning the environment, and looking for for negative things to go wrong. The more traumatic events you've experienced in your life, the more of your brain might be devoted to this function of vigilance and scanning the environment at all times, watching and waiting for something to go wrong. And as we mentioned before, the brain can reactivate traces of old negative memories that haven't been visited or thought about for months or years. So if you get this picture of your brain being on alert, on patrol all the time, watching out for anything that's dangerous or risky for you, the more trauma you've been exposed to, the more likely your brain is to be hypervigilant, watching, waiting, expecting something to go wrong, always prepared for something to happen that's wrong, the more your brain will overreact when something does happen, and something that appears to be slightly risky, the brain can overreact greatly too. And your brain is not likely to forget any of those negative experiences that have happened, not without some help. So here's the catch. Even if you're trying to live a positive life, even if you work every day on thinking positive thoughts, and you are trying to be an upbeat person who removes negativity from your life so that you can attract more positivity into your life, no matter how much of your effort and energy and time you're putting into those positive activities every day, your brain is working against you all the time because your brain prefers the negative. And the only thing you can do about it is work to train your brain to let go of some of the negative, kind of dampen down your brain's response to the negative, and help associate those traumatic memories with positive feelings in the present. So adverse childhood experiences have the capacity to keep you from living in the present moment by trapping your energy in the past or by projecting fear into the future. And secondly, adverse childhood experiences interfere with your ability to make positive changes by depleting the energy that's necessary for you to create and sustain deep internal transformation. And third, adverse childhood experiences prevent you from being your true self because they continually cause you to react to new situations with old emotions of anxiety, fear, and anger. So those are the ways that adverse childhood experiences can hinder your spiritual growth. And in order to recover from them, you must go back to the past and work through your old wounds. And delving into past memories to replace the pain with understanding is the only way to get over it for good. There are three keys to creative healing, which is the healing that's necessary to remove your energy from the hidden wounds of the past. The first is to name it. The second is to reclaim it. And the third is to reframe it. So you can follow these steps to free yourself from the painful past. When you name it, you identify the wounds of your childhood. To do this, you will trace your family timeline to discover the stresses and losses that occurred in your past. And again, as per our rule, without blame or shame. We're going to name our wounds and simply call them what they are, but without a need to figure out who to blame for the wounds. We're simply accepting them as part of our life. This is part of what happened, what came to us. It doesn't matter who's at fault or where the blame lies, because that's not what we're looking for right here. And we're removing the shame from the wounds that we've experienced, because that shame isn't helpful to us. It doesn't help us move forward in life to attach shame to something that has already happened in the past, that's over and done with, something that was not our fault, that we didn't choose, but that was simply what life brought to us. So as we name these wounds that have occurred in the past, we are going to eliminate blame or shame and not attach that to the wounds we've experienced. The second step in our creative healing process is to reclaim it. In this step, we're going to own the past as part of the gift of life. This means you'll need to cherish all of your life experiences with reverence. And again, as our rule of creative healing stated, practice self-piety rather than self-pity. This is an important step in the process when after we've identified what the wounds are, we truly embrace them. We truly bring them back into our own hearts and truly welcome back in that experience and that aspect of our lives. Instead of rejecting them and disowning them, we're going to welcome back the memories, we're welcoming back in the pain and the hurt, and we're accepting it as part of our life, as part of the beautiful picture and tapestry that life has woven for us to live. The third step in the creative healing process is to reframe it. And by reframing it, it means we're going to find the good in everything. We're going to rewrite your story from a positive perspective. And we're going to help you nurture yourself with love and compassion through this process of reframing. So to remember one more time the four rules of creative healing, we're going to name our wounds without blame or shame. And by doing so, take responsibility for our own lives. We're going to tell the truth and be honest with ourselves and with others. We're going to practice self-piety, not self-pity. And in this process, we will have reverence for all of life. We're going to use our strengths to support our weaknesses. And in this way, the gifts we've been given will help us heal the wounds that we've been given at the same time. And we have to trust and accept that we've been given the gifts we need in order to heal. We have to trust the universe or trust God or whoever we believe is the creative force in our lives. We have to trust that we have enough gifts to heal what we've been asked to carry in this lifetime. And so before we move on to talk about the homework for Module 2, I want to tell you a little story of a former patient of mine to help you see exactly how this work, this creative healing work on your hidden memories, could make a difference to you in your life. So this particular patient was a woman around 40 years old who had been trying to quit smoking for a number of years. She didn't really enjoy smoking anymore and knew it was bad for her health and really wanted to stop smoking. She was very highly motivated, but she had already tried everything available out there. She had tried medications, patches, electronic cigarettes. She had tried hypnosis. She tried acupuncture. She'd been through just about every type of therapy or treatment I've ever heard of to help her stop smoking, and she had not been able to successfully make that change in her life. She had stopped for a month or two at a time, but always started smoking again and didn't understand why, didn't know what to do. She was feeling very desperate because she so wanted to quit smoking. So since she'd already tried everything I knew of as a possible aid to help her and stop her smoking, I decided to just sit and ask her some questions and listen to her story. And the question I asked her was, when did you start smoking? What was going on in your life at the time you started smoking? And she was a little bit surprised and said, wow, no one's ever asked me that before. So she went into her story and told me she had started smoking at the age of 14. At that particular time, she had been raised by a single mom, a divorced mom, for the previous 10 years. But when she was 14, her mom got remarried to her stepfather, and her stepfather had a couple of younger children who came to live in the home with her and her mother. So her life drastically changed overnight at the age of 14 with this marriage of her mom to a new husband. and a new family was created when two younger children were brought into the household. She did not get along well with the stepfather and felt rejected by him and basically didn't feel like she was part of the family. The stepfather also introduced a lot of new rules into the household that hadn't been part of her life when it was just her and her mother. And she was very unhappy with the situation. So she started smoking as a way of rebelling against the stepfather and against her mother as well for this new marriage and situation that she found herself in. And she told me that she actually didn't even smoke most of the time. She carried a cigarette in her pocket. And carrying that cigarette gave her the reminder that I'm doing what I want to do. I can take care of myself. And she said her mother and stepfather actually didn't even know that she smoked. It was a private rebellion on her own part that gave her the strength to get through those days. Well, we went a little deeper into the story because I wanted to know about her earlier childhood. And it turned out that 10 years earlier, when she was four, was the time when her parents were divorced and her father left the home. She didn't actually remember much about that divorce, but it was significant that he left the family and she didn't see him again during the next 10 years. So it was, in a sense, an abandonment of sorts by her father, who had just disappeared from her life. She remembered being totally happy just being alone with her mom and didn't recall sadness or trauma from the divorce. Yet we know from what we've learned that that had to be a significant change for her at the age of four. So as we looked back at her past, I understood how her original adverse experience was the divorce of her mother and father when she was only 4 years old, and a feeling of abandonment by her father and being left alone. When her mother remarried 10 years later, she was reliving the same abandonment because it felt to her that her mother was abandoning her to become part of a new family, and she was more or less being left out of that new family. And smoking cigarettes became the one thing that made her feel strong and whole in that situation. Carrying that cigarette in her pocket was a reminder at all times that she was her own person, that she could determine her future, and she was strong and could do what she wanted to do regardless of what was happening around her. Once I heard the story, I pointed all of this out to her. I told her about that original sense of abandonment when her parents were divorced, how her mother's remarriage was recreating the feeling of abandonment, and how the cigarette in her pocket had actually become her lifeline. It was actually the thing that helped her survive and feel strong at a time in her life when she was in a crisis. So no wonder she couldn't give up the cigarettes. They had been her one friend that she had at the age of 14 when she needed something to help her get through. Cigarettes provided her with that lifeline. As soon as she understood her attachment to cigarettes in a different way, she was suddenly able to stop smoking almost immediately. And in fact, what we did was have her, during the transition time while she was quitting smoking, she carried a cigarette in her pocket just like she had done when she was 14, so that she could remind herself she wasn't losing her lifeline. She wasn't losing her strength or her power or her ability to express who she was. She was simply giving up a habit that she didn't need any longer, that didn't serve her anymore. And that's what it took to help her successfully quit smoking. So it's a powerful story when you think about it. And the possibilities of making changes in your life, of getting over some old wounds that you may not even remember and may not think are affecting you, is very appealing. So I hope that you feel inspired and you're going to continue on in this course and keep doing the work that's ahead of you. And now we're going to go on to your homework for Module 2, which is first to print the handouts, and one is the ACE score that I've given you. It includes an additional page of potential adverse experiences that you might want to consider. And while the official ACE score is only those 10 questions on the first page, I suggest you look through the list of adverse experiences that I've included on the second page and also give yourself a score of 1 for any one of those events that have occurred in your life, and just to see for your own awareness what your ACE score is. And then I'd like you to journal about some other questions. This time around, we're going to look at what are your major health issues? What issues are facing you, if any? If you have none, that's fantastic. And if you do have health issues that you're looking at that you would like to improve or changes you'd like to make in your life, please list those in your journal. I'd like you to also look at what situations are most likely to trigger your negative emotions. And I'm particularly thinking about those times when your emotions are out of proportion to the situation that you're in. What are the triggers for you that cause you to overreact and just lose it sometimes? What is it that, if you can identify it, are there patterns or are there certain things that tend to trigger you? The next question for you to write about is, do you like yourself? Why or why not? And I want you to really stop and think about that and really think, not answer how you think you should answer, but what's the honest truth? Do you like yourself? And if you do, why? And if you don't, why not? And maybe you have some of both. You like some things and you don't like other things. But I'd like you to just do some reflecting on that and write about that in your journal. And the fourth question for your journal is, what fears are arising in you right now? And what I'm getting at here is, as we do this work and get a little bit closer to looking at your childhood, I want you to stop and think, now, are there already a few fears starting to come up? Fears about what we might find when we look in your childhood, or fears about what you might have to face, or fears about letting go of things that have mattered to you in the past. So those are your journaling assignments. I hope you'll do your homework for this module and really give it some thought. Think about what you're doing before you move on to module 3. And meanwhile, I hope you're enjoying the course. So take care, have a good week, and live a life that really matters.